what do we mean when we say a winning coach? Does it mean they win a lot or that they're good at their job? And what does it mean when we say they're good at their job? Does it mean they win a lot or something else, something more complicated? Joining us, Joe Ehrman. He's a former All-American athlete at Syracuse University. He's a former NFL player and the co-founder of Coach for America. He's written a new book. It's called Inside Out Coaching. Joe, welcome to the show.
Well, great to be with you. Thank you.
We thought it's a nice time to kick off the conversation at the beginning of the school year and at the beginning of arguably one of the most contentious times of the school sports year, the football season. You know a little something about that. To our listeners, did you or do you have a favorite coach? Give us a call and share your story. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Joe, you have preached both in your book and through your inspirational speaking that winning at life is key. So how does a coach balance the desire to win on the field and the need to teach success off the field?
Well, I think those things go hand in hand, actually. I think winning's a byproduct of doing things right with your players. To me, there's two kinds of coaches in America. There are transactional, quote, coaches. They function from kind of a quid pro quo. If the player meets their needs, the coach's expectations, then they'll meet the external needs of that player, whether that's playing time, popularity, or some kind of praise. The other kind of coach is a transformational coach. They understand the power, the platform, the position they have in the lives of young people, and their goal is to change the arc of every young person's life. So that plays for them. So you have to integrate the character-based kind of teaching and learning with competition.
What sort of coaching did you grow up with? The transactional coaching where it was cutting a deal all the time or the transitional or transformational coaching?
Well, what I did in preparation for writing the book, I created a graph and I graded every coach that I played for from the age of 10 to 36. And I charted whether that experience was positive, negative, transactional, transformational. What did I learn? What could I have learned? What did I wish I didn't learn? What developmental needs were met? So I had a number of transactional coaches, but the transformational ones that really helped me see a part and understand it myself that I didn't necessarily have. They're the ones that helped get me to the position and the fulfillment of my own potential. They're the ones that most.
Joe Ehrman, I have to tell you that I can barely hear you. I know you're on a cell phone. I was wondering, are you outside? We're going to have to fix it because I cannot hear you.
Well, you hear me better now?
Somewhat.
Yeah,
we'll do our best. It's hard. We're probably not going to be able to keep the interview if we can't get the sound improved. So, but to our listeners, once again, do you have a favorite or did you have a favorite coach growing up? Do you want to talk about that? We'd love to hear your stories, get some examples. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page at All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Joe Ehrman, where does the role of parents end and the role of the coach begin? And has that changed over time?
Well, I think parents have lost their ball in the weeds on sports in America. Parents have to have an understanding of what their expectations, what developmental needs are going to be met in their children. And I think parents need to work hand in hand with coaches. It really needs to be about the healthy social, emotional, moral, ethical, and civic well-being of young people. Nobody should know the needs of their children better than that parent. So I think parents and coaches have to collaborate on how to create the most positive.
You know what? We're going to go to a break right now, and we're going to try to fix the problem with the call and hopefully get back to it. And if we can't, then we'll just move right on. We have some other guests coming up. Alan Chamberlain, he's a youth basketball and baseball coach in Grove City. And then coming up in the next segment, Roger Ingalls, he's athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 MBR News.
Dick Cheney emerges with a new memoir. President Obama returns early from vacation. And Michelle Bachmann says, just kidding, the hurricane and earthquake weren't really God's wrath. I'm Neil Conan. Neither storms, nor temblors, nor canceled flights can keep Ken Rudin from his obnoxious puns. The political junkie joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation begins later today. It starts at 2 on 89.7 NPR News. Partly sunny skies today, a high of 84, cloudy tonight and a low of 66 degrees. Sunshine for Thursday, a warmer day with a high of 91. Partly cloudy Thursday night, a low of 69 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from Yoga on High, proud to host Rodney Yee and Colleen Sedman for an evening of yoga September 9th. More details on attending at 291-4444 or yogaonhigh.com.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're trying to get a better connection with our guest, Joe Ehrman. We have not succeeded yet, but he's the author of Inside Out Coaching, How Sports Can Transform Lives. But we also have with us, who's joining us a little bit later, but he's with us right now, is Alan Chamberlain. He's a youth basketball and baseball coach in Grove City. He is the coach of the Grove City Jaguars 11-year-old travel baseball team, and he's the athletic director of the Midwest Athletic Alliance. He's coached 20 different teams in both baseball and basketball since 2005. Alan Chamberlain, I'm really glad you're here.
Hi, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We talked earlier about transitional and transactional coaches or coaching with Joe Ehrman, author of Inside Out Coaching. It's a big theme throughout his book. Have you thought about the differences, or did you have different terms you would assign to those concepts?
When you go with the transactional, what he's saying is the player performs, the player does well. He does that, you ask him, you then reward him with something. The transition is more what I base my coaching philosophy on. The feeling that a kid gets for succeeding, the feeling, the look on his face when he does something, or even when he doesn't do something well, when a coach can step in, be able to teach him from there, let him learn from his mistakes that he made, or her, in the case of the girls' basketball that I've done, mm-hmm. and continue to promote that positive vibe to where you messed up this time, but, you know, the next time, the reward, the transition, I guess the transactional aspect of it would be the success that they feel, the inner side of them, you know, that they've achieved something, they've accomplished something. And from a coaching standpoint, not being paid, you know, volunteer coaches at my level, and here in the Central Ohio Youth Baseball League, there's 380 so teams. None of the coaches get paid. There's a lot of outstanding guys out there teaching the right things, teaching the right aspects of the game, when there is success and when there is failure, handling it the proper way. And at the end of the day, that's what's important at our level. I can't speak to the higher levels. I'm sure where the transactional becomes more aspect of it than the transitional. But I'm certain at that higher level, it's more, I mean, especially with the recent news with the Ohio State and Jim Tressel and everything going on, that when you start reaching the higher levels, you get into the TV, you get into the media aspect of it, it becomes more transactional, I think, just by society's own nature.
The value that society puts
Absolutely.
On it. How did you, when you were growing up, what was your experience with coaches and how did that influence you as a youth coach now?
Coach Dave Bates, hopefully he's watching the show today. He was my first coach that I really, truly remember having an impact on me as far as making me want to achieve. That feeling of seeing a man, a coach, a woman, whatever your coach may be, and wanting to really go out and perform for him. It's, to me as a player, Coach Bates was very important to me because I knew that fail, succeed, whatever it was, he had something to say to me at the end of the day, and I was going to learn from it. I was fortunate enough, Coach Bates was also a...
Where was that at?
That was in... It started in Grove City, Grove City Baseball Association was what it was called years ago. Mm-hmm. Then he was my student counselor, 6th and 7th grade at Pleasant View Middle School, and it so happened as I went to high school, he got hired at the high school, and he was also my student counselor for my entire high school career. As I got into higher leagues and into travel baseball, I played for the Pleasant View Youth Athletic Association out in Pleasant View Middle School. And the one coach that I had, I don't really remember that well, which tells me must have not had much of an impact on me. And I racked my brains last night coming in for this interview. I wanted to remember Coach Ken's last name so I could accredit him. I don't remember Coach Ken's last name because I don't think Coach Ken had a last name. His name was Coach Ken. And you don't talk about a guy that you'd want to go out and bust your hump for. Sense of humor. We all had nicknames. I've emulated a lot of my style from him as far as how I deal with the kids on a fun aspect of it and how I deal with the nicknames and trying to make light of situations when there is an error made. You know, it's not the end of the world kind of philosophy. The teaching aspect of it, I take a lot from Coach Bates.
How do you or do you talk to the kids about their relationship with their parents and what they bring back to their parents? Because I imagine that a lot of kids get a lot of questions after the game because parents often are intimidated by the coach or they don't want to be the parents that nag the coach, and the kid gets kind of in between.
When you get into parents and youth coaching at our level, I don't have a kid on the team, so I'm probably a little bit different. I'm not what they negatively refer to as a daddy coach. Mm-hmm. Not having a kid on the baseball team. Now, when I coach Madison, my daughter, mm-hmm. in the basketball, obviously I have a kid on the team, but I don't treat her any different. The parents range from a parent who just sits there and lets you do your thing, ask you after practice, hey, what can I do with the kid to improve him here, improve him there? What do we need to work on? And then you have other parents who, no matter what you do, no matter what position you put them in, they're still going to complain and they're still going to try to find something wrong because they're financially invested. The cost of youth athletics is quite expensive at what we do, and they feel financially invested. They want to know why this is happening, why that isn't happening. How I ask my boys to deal with their parents, I guess I really don't cover that. I talk to them about what I want them to do. I talk to them about working hard, going home. One of my things that I'm famous for saying with my teams is everything we do, we give it our all. If your mother asks you to clean your room, son, go in there and clean your room like it's never been cleaned before. You know, when she comes in, she's super impressed by the way that your room's cleaned. And what I'm trying to promote is that attitude of everything that we do, we're really getting after it. We're trying to give it our best. We're not taking any time off, both on the field, in their schoolwork, and you know, cleaning your room, mowing the grass. If your mom makes you mow the grass, mow it as well as you possibly can. You know, don't take any shortcuts.
My guest is Alan Chamberlain, youth basketball and baseball coach in Grove City. If you have a question or comment for Alan, or you want to tell us a story about your favorite coach from childhood, or maybe you have a favorite coach right now, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, Roger Ingles, he's athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Join WOSU for a Chefs in the City Ohio beer tasting in the outdoor beer garden at the historic Granville Inn, September 14th. Local food hors d'oeuvres by Chef Chad Lavely will be paired with a selection of beers from four of Ohio's best breweries. Brewmaster Matthew Barbie from Lancaster's Rock Mill Brewery will co-host this exclusive event. Tickets are on sale now for $45 each. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve your tickets and look for information about the Granville Inn's lodging special.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Partly sunny skies today and a high of 84 degrees. Cloudy skies tonight, a low of 66. Sunshine for Thursday and another warm day with a high of 91. Partly cloudy Thursday night, a low of 69 degrees. And sunshine for Friday and a hot day as we look ahead to Friday, a high of 93. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about what makes a good coach. Heck, what makes a great coach? Why stop short at good? If you have a story about your favorite coach, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We're talking about, of course, personal experience with coaches, not Woody Hayes. And unless you had Woody Hayes as a coach, and then we'd love to hear from you too. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. You can tweet at Ann Fisher WOSU. My guest, Alan Chamberlain, he's the coach of the Grove City Jaguars 11-year-old travel baseball team. He's also the athletic director of the Midwest Athletic Alliance. He's coached 20 different teams in both baseball and basketball since 2005, all girls as well as boys. Welcome back to the show, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And with us now, Roger Engels. He's returning. It's a return engagement with Roger. He's athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University in Delaware. He's been a head baseball coach, assistant football coach, and assistant women's basketball coach. 2005, Roger was named Sports Ethics Fellow by the Institute for International Sports. Thanks so much for joining us, Roger.
Good morning.
You hire coaches, and you hire coaches that get paid. Did the act of hiring coaches change how you coach yourself?
I think that when you try to evaluate who's going to become a good coach or who's going to be a good coach, you have to look at a lot of different factors. And I know that myself, when I was coaching, sometimes you get a small picture view, but obviously as an athletic director, you get a big picture view, and you've got to find the people who are the best fit for your university and your program, and that's really, I think, the toughest thing is what coaches out there understand the difference between having a great team and having a great program.
And how do you figure that out? What kind of questions do you ask them? How do you figure that out?
Well, the first thing I ask is why are they in this? Why do they want to be a coach? What is it that they're going to get out of it? I think Joe probably would talk about the old style coaches that we want to win and we want to, we're going to do whatever it takes. And I think that today's coaches, especially those in our program, are coaches that do it for the love of the game, the love of the kids. They're there for the right reasons. They like seeing kids come in at a certain level and help them get to the next level. There's more to the game than just winning and losing, especially at our level in Division III athletics. It's all about getting the education and getting them prepared to go out, become global leaders in the world, and trying to find the person who understands that value and is a good fit that's going to push the academic side of the program just as hard as they are the athletic side, and they're there for the kids. That's the hardest thing to judge, I think, and if you had the easy answer to it, we could probably all make a lot of money because a lot of athletic directors are looking for that. But a lot of times it's kind of a gut feel, too, of when you sit down and you talk to folks and you try to find out what really makes them tick as a person, what makes them want to be that coach.
Alan Chamberlain, I know a high school coach who is so frustrated because by the time kids even get into junior high, so many of them are burned out on youth sports. Their arms are shot or their attitude is shot because they've had these transactional coaches, often is the case, and they're just tired and burned out. You must see that in what you do.
Absolutely. I've seen it with my 11U team. In fact, for 2012 and 12U, we're not going to begin our indoor practices and our winter conditioning until about middle of January. What I found last year is maybe around May, they're just kind of got a point where we've been practicing since November, working out, working fundamentals, doing running. By the time we've reached that November or that May point, they're just getting a little tired of it. At the end of the day, they're 11 and 12 year old kids. They have many other interests. They've got a lot of opportunity to get into other things with the internet, the PlayStation, the Xbox, and kids should do that stuff as well. I think that stuff's good for their creativity. But yeah, absolutely, they do start to get burnt out. There is a lot of pressure. When you go into these big tournaments, it's very, very competitive, very competitive. Every team out there is there to win, as is my team. But we judge more on, at the end of the day, how did we perform? Did we play the game as hard as we possibly could? And if you're getting that kind of production out of your team, at the end of the day, that's what you're looking for without burning them out. And I think the burnout comes from if you acknowledge an error made in a game, well, we need to fix that error, and becoming more reactional after from game to game instead of staying with your philosophy, staying with your planned attack on your defense, you know, what you do in certain innings. If I relate to baseball, I'm primarily a baseball guy, but we talk about different parts of the game, different parts of the innings. And if you continue to dredge it out, you don't stop your practices and have fun. Last Friday, instead of having practice, I canceled practice and we had a wiffle ball game where I invited kids out. We let younger sisters play. And let little brothers play, 5 and 6 year old kids, and it was a break for the kids. They had a great time. The parents came out and played, and it creates that bond, and at the same time gets rid of some of that stress of, oh, it's another practice, oh no, is he going to make us slide for an hour again, you know, and you get rid of some of that. But although as a coach you do have to be hard, you do have to acknowledge those fundamentals of the game and drill them. That is part of to get your team to where you want, to get your athletes where you want them to play. You have to do those things, but you have to sprinkle in some of the fun too, some of the reasons that they enjoy taking time out of their lives and coming out and playing for an elite travel baseball team.
Roger Ingles, I imagine, you know, at the college level, a lot of the students that are athletes there and have worked so hard to get to that level, do you have some kind of drop-off after that freshman year where they're there and they realize, I'm tired. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of working for this thing that doesn't seem to matter anymore?
Oh, I think you have a drop-off. I mean, it's not just athletics. I think it's in a lot of different areas in life. But you get kids that as they grow and mature, they find areas that they have more success in or develop interest in and branch out. But We have a pretty good retention rate with our kids coming in as freshmen and moving through 4 years of college athletics. I think across the board, it doesn't matter if it's Division III or Division I, rosters are in a pyramid shape for a reason. You have a lot more freshmen usually in your program than you have seniors. And it is because it is time-consuming and it is a lot of effort, and kids have to be organized, and they've got to put their priorities in order. But they can definitely do it. We had last year out of 500 athletes, we had over 90 that were more than one sport athletes. So, you know, it's happening. We don't get as many two sport athletes coming to us, but we seem to be able to develop a lot of them, kids that want to play too and want to be involved. And I think it's important for student athletes today to have those opportunities to go out and compete and to test themselves and to do it in an environment that they enjoy and want to go to.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guests, Alan Chamberlain, he's youth basketball and baseball coach in Grove City, and also Roger Ingles, he's athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University in Delaware. If you have a question or comment, if you want to have a story to share about your favorite coach, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And James in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, coaches need to be careful with developing young people, because the fact is, if you blow out your elbow or knee when you're playing Little League, you're never going to make it into the majors. So you need to preserve your body.
They have rules for that now, right? I mean, there's actually how many times a kid can pitch and that sort of thing, Alan?
Yeah, absolutely. A few years ago, I was privileged enough to sit on the board with Doug Hare here in Coybal, COYBL, the second largest in Ohio Youth Baseball League. And we went from a per innings pitch count. Pitchers were allowed to go six innings, you know, had different how much rest they had to have. And we implemented the new pitch count rule. For my age group at 12U, my kids are allowed to throw 85 pitches. After 85 pitches, they must have 4 full days of rest. Not only that, after games, it's very crucial to have your catchers and pitchers take a slight run to get rid of the stagnant blood inside their body, gets new blood circulating. And it's important for them to ice them down. Player protection is very important. Now, blowing out a knee, rolling an ankle, you know, the risk involved with sports. Now, obviously, it's my job to teach them correct sliding technique. That's where most of my ankle injuries are going to come into play, also with knees. But as far as the elbows, the shoulders, and the pitching, no curveballs. I tell my boys on my team, they asked last summer, when can we start throwing curveballs? And I said, well, when you have 25 hairs underneath your arm. And I had one of my players raise his hand, and He says, "Coach, do they have to be black hairs?" And I said, "Yes, they have to be black hairs. 25 black hairs, they can begin throwing the curveball."
Because they've reached that mature, physically matured level that they can handle it.
That's correct. And, and you never know from a player. A player that I have on my team now, he may be able to throw a curveball and it never affect him. The same kid throws curveball, and in 2 weeks his arm could be hurting him to the extent where I can't pitch him anymore. It's up to the parents also at home not to let them throw the curveball. It's for the coach to fight that temptation. You know, if I throw two fastballs, I throw a changeup, and you're biting on the changeup. If I had a nice curve, boy, it'd be nice to throw it right here. It's hard, you know, to fight that temptation. And when you play teams, I played a team this weekend. It was 12, and they were throwing curveballs. My opinion, they shouldn't have been doing it. But at the same time, you don't know what the parents are teaching. You don't know what the coaches are teaching. So it's out of my realm to control their team. It's just for me to teach my kids how to hit a curveball.
Thanks, James, for that question. If anyone else has a question or comment for our guests, you can email us as well at allsides@wosu.org. Roger Ingles, do motivational styles change with the times since you've been coaching? I hear really loud, like, hip-hop and rock music blasting from the practice field at OSU across the street at the football practice field. I'm not sure that would have been the case 25 years ago. Does it
no.
change?
Oh, definitely. It changes. You know, as kids change and society changes and the culture changes, you're always going to go through, you know, different techniques and different ways of reaching kids. And, you know, there used to be in athletics, you didn't give water breaks because everyone thought you should take salt tablets, and which was the worst thing you can do. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're always improving. Just to go back to the James's question real quick in mm-hmm. terms of the overuse and stuff in Little League, nobody ever made the major leagues as a 12-year-old. And I think it's really important for parents and coaches to understand that these are 11- and 12-year-old kids. And what they're doing is learning the game. They're not becoming experts at it at 11 and 12. And I think that one of the factors, it's nice that you have programs and you have established rules for innings pitched and so on. But parents have to be careful that they're not playing their kids in two and three different leagues, which a lot of them do. And it's one thing to say, okay, I've got an 85-pitch limit for this team, and then tomorrow I'm going to go pitch for another team. And it happens a lot. You see it with high school leagues whose kids then play on travel ball or
right.
play on an American Legion team. They've got to be smart, and parents have got to be smart about holding their kids back and doing what's best for them. I coached in a high school program when I first got out of college, and I was probably myself and the baseball coach that I was working with at the time probably were the most disliked people in the school district at the time, because we put a rule in the Little League Baseball that every kid had to play a different position every inning. And everyone threw their arms up. It's like, what are you talking about? How can we play a different position every inning? And we're not going to win. And we told them we don't care about winning. What we care about is player development. We care about kids having fun. We don't want the biggest kid being stuck out in right field. And we don't want the kid that can throw the hardest always pitching every game, because who knows what they're going to be like when they're 18 years old. That same high school, when those kids came through, was state champions, because they had five or six pitchers, and they had two or three kids that could catch, and they didn't all just quit and get the burnout that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 12-year-old that's 5'10" is probably going to be 5'10" when he's 18. That 5'7" kid might be the 6'4" kid that develops that 93-mile-an-hour fastball, but if you don't give them the opportunities and give them a love for the game when they're 12, you're never going to see them as 18-year-olds.
And a love for the game, that's part enjoying the game and part somehow there's a fire in the belly kind of a thing you're looking for too, right, Roger?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think when kids learn the game and learn how it's supposed to be played and they have fun going to the park, they're going to have that fire in the belly. I used to leave my fall practices in baseball. We would finish the last day on a Sunday every fall, and I would go by the ballpark on Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock. And I knew if we had a successful fall, if I went by on Monday when they were not required to be there and saw kids on the field. And every fall, you know, I'd drive by and there'd be 20, 25 kids out working on their own. Then we knew we left them wanting more, not so burnt out they couldn't wait to get out of there. And I think sometimes coaches have this mentality that they think more is better. Sometimes less is better. You want the kids to leave wanting more, not just saying, I can't wait to get away from here.
Sometimes, too, Alan, that happens with parents. Well, I don't want to blame the parents, but good, well-intentioned parents who have their kids in camps all summer long, baseball or football or whatever it might be, after they've just finished a season, or hockey or whatever it might be. And that's becoming more and more just de rigueur. I mean, it's just normal now that kids are doing those kind of camps.
Yeah, absolutely. Camps are a big deal. Ohio State does a lot of camps here. They do a great fall camp that a lot of my kids are going up to. But these coaches are aware of everything that we're talking about now, the burnout, the leaving them wanting more. And they're going to take them to the next level, maybe something I haven't taught them yet, which is really going to spark the kids' interest. Most of your players are playing in my level of travel baseball. As soon as the baseball season ends, it's football time. And no sooner than the football season ends, it's basketball time. And then when the basketball ends, we're finishing out our conditioning and we're going straight back into baseball. You have some kids out there focused primarily on one sport, and I try to, for those kids that are baseball kids only, and I have several on my team, I want them to take 3 months off from their arm, no throwing, no hitting, no pitching, no nothing. Give 3 months break from baseball, come back refreshed from it, and then ready to work out. Give their body some time to grow, because they're growing so much. You can notice a difference in a season where you pass out the jerseys at the beginning of the year, and it's a little baggy on him. You know, by the end of the year, he looks like he's about to hulk up right out of the thing. Mm-hmm. So with that development, you know, it comes to make sure you're developing them properly.
Oh, Roger, you were talking earlier about kids who play more than one sport at the college level. And, of course, at some place like OSU, that's probably pretty rare. But at Ohio Wesleyan, you said you have a few here and there. Is that physically better for them, or is there an advantage for them to do that?
Well, I always like two-sport athletes as a head baseball coach, because my fall practices, we had a five-week period that we practiced, and we played some games against outside people. But it was really kind of a developmental period. And I felt that those student-athletes that were out there playing football and competing 10 times were learning more, especially after that first year, than I was going to give them in a fall practice situation. I think the competition is where kids develop and grow. Practice is great, and obviously it's very much needed. That's where you work on fundamentals, where you work on the skills of the game. But it's the competition and being able to see kids rise and adjust to adversity and to deal with the different things that pop up through the course of a contest that's good for kids. And I think that there's the two-sport and even three-sport athletes that we have. The one thing that I would say about each one of them is they're very much intrinsically motivated. They drive themselves. They want to be good, and they want to, and it's not just on the field. They want to be good in the classroom. They want to be good in the different clubs and groups that they're involved with on campus. And I think it's important. I think that too many times we try to pigeonhole kids into one sport. Too many times as coaches, especially on a high school level, we make it almost impossible for kids to do more than one sport. We require summer leagues, and my own daughter was a three-sport athlete, and I can't tell you how many times where she had volleyball open gyms or basketball summer leagues and softball games, you know, that were all conflicting with each other. And then you got all these different coaches saying, well, why aren't you here, or why didn't you go here? And you know, I go back to the days when Alan and I were growing up that, you know, you had open gyms and you could go, but you made the choice as an athlete. It wasn't dictated for you. And too many times I just think we're making it very difficult for kids to have that choice anymore.
My guests are Roger Engels, athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. Also, Alan Chamberlain, he's youth basketball and baseball coach at Grove City. We're talking about what makes a good coach. Can get kind of technical, but it also has a lot to do with personality and motivational skills. If you have a question or comment for them, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We want to hear from you about who was your favorite coach, or who is your favorite coach if we have one right now, or maybe you have a favorite coach for your kids, one that you remember for your own kids. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the story and power of the legendary Gypsy Rose Lee. They called her the intellectual stripper. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point is later this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. Discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher on our website, WOSU.org/All Sides. On the show's website, you can listen and watch All Sides from 10 until noon and participate in the show through our live chat. You can also like All Sides on Facebook and be sure to follow Ann on Twitter at AnnFisherWOSU. 75 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunny skies today and a high of 84. Cloudy skies tonight and a low of 66. Sunshine for Thursday and another and a warm day for tomorrow, high of 91. And stay with All Sides with Ann Fisher beginning at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program. Coping with Cancer, a photojournalist discusses his story and a new documentary film that he's made. That's on All Sides with Ann Fisher at 11 o'clock. Thanks for joining us today, and the program continues.
Welcome back. We're talking about what makes a great coach. You know, everybody has their own idea of what makes a great coach. It's a lot more than one factor. When I was looking online, I saw this website for coaching coaches, and they had the top six challenges. And here is the order that they listed them in. You are expected to win or start winning very soon. You have to deal with difficult parents. You have to decide who gets playing time and who gets cut. You face every type of defense imaginable, zone, man, box, and one, full court press, matchup zone, and the list goes on as if I know what they're talking about there. And they finally say, and you're expected to serve as a positive role model. So that's sixth out of about 10. Positive role model pops up. Roger Ingalls from Ohio Wesleyan University, does that surprise you that that attitude is still out there, that that falls so far below winning?
It doesn't surprise me, but it's, you know, we had our all student athlete meeting last night. We had about 500 student athletes at Selby Stadium. And the one thing that I told our student athletes is that they're role models. And whether they want to believe it or not, there are a lot of little eyes upon them. And the same thing happens to our coaches, is that they are role models to their student athletes, they're role models to the students in the stands, the little kids that come to the games. And it's a very powerful position to be in as a coach, and they need to take it seriously. But you know, winning is important. The kids want to be successful, but it's not the end all. What is important is that kids have a great experience, and that's what I tell our coaches, that my job is to make sure that they and their kids have a great experience at Ohio Wesleyan. Their job is to transform those kids from where they are today to where they want to be. And it's not always where the coaches want them to be, but they've got to be able to get the kids to the point that they want. And for some of them, that's just making the team. For some of them, it's going to be becoming a starter, becoming an everyday player, becoming an all-conference or an all-American. And for some of them, it's going to be either winning a team or an individual national championship. But the coaches have got to be able to determine what level of commitment the players want to have, and then they got to help kind of decide or help drive that motivation to get where they want to be.
We have an email from Josh. He writes, "My favorite coach was the assistant coach of my high school baseball team. He was fantastic. Coach Steve. He was a stay-at-home dad who helped out with our team. He was always good for a laugh and was always there to listen. My head coach would get so mad when we didn't win and we lost a lot. But Coach Steve would say, all right, you can be mad for 2.3 seconds and then it's time to move on. Life goes on." I remember that phrase about a lot of things today. Josh's description of, you know, it sounds like it was a good cop, bad cop sort of a situation, reminds me of Miracle, you know, the coach for the 1980 Olympic hockey team, where he was kind of distanced from the players personally, and then he had his assistant who had more of a relationship with them. Alan Chamberlain, what about that?
Well, to say that I never get aggravated would be it would be a bold-faced lie. I don't want to do that. Sometimes it does get very frustrating. To me, the frustration doesn't come from whether we won or we lost. It's how we played. And I know that sounds stereotypical. Of course, he's going to say that. But if they're out there sliding, they're giving it their all, they're running as hard as they can, they're looking to make contact and be aggressive, then I'm okay with it. If it seems like they've taken a defeated route, or almost like they've given up, oh, what's the point? These guys hit the ball so well, we're not going to be able to stop them. It does create frustration because it goes against what we're teaching. Baseball, to me, the great thing about baseball is you can relate baseball to the game of life. And I talk about the game of life to the boys all the time. Some things are going to be smooth going, just banging inning after inning after inning, and everything's going to be going nice and smooth. Sometimes it's like that in life as well. Everything's going great. Everything's going great. And then all of a sudden it changes. And when it does make those changes, how are we going to adapt to make the changes within the game? And then I try to relate that back into life, trying to get these young men to start thinking about the decisions they make. What mind state are they in when they make the decision? Are they frustrated? Are they aggravated? And I try to lead myself also when they clearly can see I'm aggravated. And I try to still show them that I'm aggravated, but at the same time teach them too, so they can understand that their head coach is upset with them right now. I spend a lot of time with the boys. They spend a lot of time with me. And when they don't perform, what I want them to know is I'm not upset the fact that we lost the game. I'm just upset in the way that we chose to lose the game. If we did surrender, if we did look like we had some players that just kind of hung their shoulders and kind of gave up on the game, then we're not teaching what we need to be teaching in the program.
614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to speak with either of our guests, Roger Engels. He's only going to be with us for a few more minutes. And Alan Chamberlain, youth basketball and baseball coach in Grove City. Sean in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Hey, I really relate to that comment about baseball, teaching kids life lessons. I've been coaching my son and working with my son's team for the last couple of years, and I'll be starting with my daughter with soccer tonight, actually. But, you know, there's nothing like, you know, teaching a kid to run all the way through first every time, and they don't understand it, and they don't understand it until the first time that first baseman drops that ball. And then after that, they get why you always have to run to first. And there's so many ways that you can transfer that over into life. But what I wanted to say was that my son is now in the fifth grade, and my daughter's in the third grade. And we have had to be very selective about what sports programs and which coaches will allow our kids to work with, because the culture around even the younger kids' sports nowadays is so over the top and so unbalanced. And we have, if you've got two kids, it's not, I think they talked about this a little bit earlier, it's not unreasonable for, you know, a family to be on the road every night for 4 to 5 months for a season, mm-hmm. and have different kids in different places at practices that are scheduled right during dinner time, and really you have to make a choice, even at a very young age now, that it's either going to be sports all the time or sports not at all, because so many of the programs have devolved into travel leagues, and the local schools have kind of neglected some of their less than stellar programs, where these kids aren't, if they're not willing to play all the time, there's no opportunities to play on a rec league. And that whole culture goes all the way up to the college level, where we had the issues with the cheating scandals at OSU. And, you know, I love to coach, and I love being outside with the kids, and I love the lessons that it teaches, but it seems to me that the programs that we're running for kids now do not, you know, give the lessons that I'm looking to reinstill my kids of balance and family life and arts. And we've got our high schools, you know, where your arts programs are starved for funding, but the high school football always seems to have enough money, and after a while it just gets too much. And I'll take the response off the air, but I'd love to hear what your coaches could say about, you know, developing more balanced programs for kids at the younger college and high school levels.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean. Roger, I know you have to take off, but do you have time to respond?
Sure. One of the things I think we're very proud of at Ohio Wesleyan is the balance that our student-athletes have in their life and in the college experience. Our student-athletes are achieving higher GPAs, both men and women, and the student body in general. They're involved in everything. Our last three student body presidents are student-athletes. Five of the last six men and women of the year in our conference have been from Ohio Wesleyan. I think we've got it. I think all the stuff that's going on in Division One about how we want to make sure that we integrate the student athlete into the college experience, we've been doing in Division Three, and I know we've been doing it at Ohio Wesleyan since I've been there in 1984. And if Division One really wants to learn what it means to be a student athlete, I think some of those schools need to come down and look at some of their Division III brothers and sisters and see what they're doing at that level, because they're getting it done at that level. Now, in terms of the overcommitment and that, you know, coaches are going to be a product of the environment that they're being raised in. And when the people in charge start to understand that there's more to sports than just the wins and losses, then you're going to start to see a change at the upper levels. I don't know that you're ever going to see it in big-time football and everything else, because Ohio State, let's face it, they're not going to put 100,000 in the stadium if they're not winning in football games. But how you win can be changed, and what type of student-athlete you bring in, the commitment that you make that way, those are all important decisions that start at the very top. And it's not just the president of the university, it's the board of trustees and so on. In the youth leagues and the high schools, it's very important that coaches have support. When they try to do it the right way, that they know that their athletic administration, their principals, and everyone's going to support the fact that we're going to do things the right way. And sometimes that may mean that we don't have 25 summer league games, that we only play five or six, but it's important. And I just want to share this quick story. Mm-hmm. I have two Division I athletes. We had a number of Division I athletes over the years that transferred to Ohio Wesleyan and played baseball when I was there. Two were sitting in my office one day, and they had come from a very high-profile Division I baseball program, and they'd been with us for about 4 months, and they're sitting in my office one day, and I said, you know, gentlemen, I said, so you've been here 4 months, and, you know, share with me the difference between your experience so far at Ohio Wesleyan and what you experienced at the program you came from. And the one young man whose father played big league baseball looked up at me, and he said, Coach, it's pretty simple. I'm sitting in your office talking to you. Because that would have never happened where I came from. And I think coaches have to be accessible. The kids have got to want to come and talk to them for things besides just baseball or football or basketball. And the best coach, you know, that I've ever been around, and the guy that I considered, you know, probably my mentor in a lot of ways, was a gentleman by the name of Richard Meyer, who was a high school coach at Buckeye Valley for 35 years and was my assistant baseball coach for 18. And what coach could find out, I mean, we used to kid about it, that we'd get in a van ride to go someplace, and by the time he got off the van, he knew everything about every young man on that van. He had a great way of getting to know them, finding out what makes them tick, because not everybody has the same buttons to push. You've got to motivate kids in different ways. And coach was great about understanding and learning and being a great communicator. And I probably learned more about coaching from him than probably anybody else that I've ever been around, and none of it involved X and O's. It was all the other little things that most coaches fail with. And, you know, I think that if there are aspiring coaches and parents, seek out and find them, because there are those kind of coaches out there who are in it for the right reasons. They want to have the kids have a great experience, and they want to have success. And the success will come both on and off the field when you have those kind of individuals leading the program.
Roger Ingles, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Roger Ingles, he's the athletics director at Ohio Wesleyan University. Still with us, Alan Chamberlain, youth basketball and baseball coach in Grove City. We have Diana in Powell. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, Diana.
Hi. I grew up in a coaching family. My father's a football coach, and I actually went through grad school and did my dissertation on football coaches' wives. And since you're talking about, you know, what makes a good coach, mm-hmm. I think one of the main parts of what makes a good coach is his or her support system, and that really, you know, is the family, because it's, you know, a male-dominated sport, mm-hmm. that the coach's wives or girlfriends are very important to helping them do what they need to do, not just, you know, within the family, but within the actual sport itself. But then there's also the support system of the administration and supporting the coach, and, you know, what in my dad was in, he has been in Division I, Division II, Division III, And, you know, in Division III, they don't get as much support as they do in Division I and such. And so I was just wondering if perhaps your guest could talk a little bit about all of that.
All right, Diana. Well, Roger Ingalls is gone. I did want to read an email from Donnie, which gets to the spouse issue, and then we can wrap it up with Alan. He writes, the coaches in my life through high school formed who I am as much as the family and friends around me. Coach Wipke during middle school taught us a lot more than the sports we played. He gave us all confidence even when some of us weren't good athletes, and this carried over to the classroom and outside of school. Coach Merkel was very inspiring at Furman High School in baseball. He has more than 900 wins over 42 seasons, one of the winningest coaches in the country. In the meantime, his wife was battling ALS over several decades. I learned so much about getting the most out of life during my time with him. He really put me down the right path. Alan, you must have some pretty good support. You're probably gone a lot.
Yeah, I have three daughters. Again, I don't have a kid on the baseball team. I'm recently engaged, and I've engaged a great woman who, to be quite honest with you, when I started the MWAA, I don't believe it would be in existence without her. The support that she gives, the support that the kids give, the girls love coming to the games and watching the boys. They know who the boys are. What we try to create is that family environment. And to touch on some things that was said a little bit ago about the relationship and what it is that a coach does, as I found over my experience,
go ahead.
That the coaches are, you're more than a coach. You're a motivator. You're a manager. Sometimes I feel like I'm a child psychologist. You're a comforter. Sometimes your position as a coach is very wide. And I think the first time I realized that was after our first or second T-ball season when five or so of the kids had drew me pictures, you know, at 5 years old. Thank you, coach, and little baseballs and stuff drawn all over it. And yeah. I treasure those things still today. I still keep all of those memorabilia.
Well, Alan Chamberlain, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Sharing
Appreciate
your stories. Alan Chamberlain, he's the coach of the Grove City Jaguars, 11-year-old travel baseball team, and is the athletic director of the Midwest Athletic Alliance. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.